Everybody, hopefully you're spending time with the family. Maybe you catch some fireworks, and no matter what it is you're doing and celebrating, take a moment to remember the people who have lost their lives in any of the wars that we've had off our shores, and of course the unbelievable loss that so many people feel when somebody goes off and then they don't come back, because that's Memorial Day. Memorial Day is really to think about those people who didn't come back from the wars. So coming up this hour of America Tonight, we are going to talk to Bob Ney. Bob Ney is a former Washington congressman who represented Ohio for decades and then found himself embroiled in the Jack Abramoff scandal and ultimately went to prison for it, went to federal prison. His book, Sideswiped, is one of the best books I've ever read. He talks about all kinds of things that happened in Washington, what happened to him along the way. He doesn't take himself out of the equation. He says that some of the things he did were stupid. He talks about that, but he talks about some of the things that are on the inside, kind of inside baseball, as I would call it, when we're always trying to figure out ways of what's happening in Washington and why don't we know this, and how do we peel back the onion? And we do that once a week with our pal Andrew Szabo. How do we get in there and dig in and find out more? And there's reasons why we don't find things out, and he talks about that in this conversation that we have. We're going to have a couple of great conversations here that so far up to this point we've had a really interesting year talking not just politics, talking about health, talking about welfare, talking about things that infuriate us, having a few laughs along the way. Speaking of laughs, Pete Siegel came on with us, and he is hilarious. He's on NPR, Wait, Don't Tell Me, that's the show he's famous for. But he's also now involved, he got involved in a project about the Constitution and found himself talking to all kinds of people about amendments, about how the amendments affected their lives. 27 amendments we have, and of course, when we look at the Constitution, we're talking about 4,000 words, and he does such a great job of cherry-picking some key stories of what is challenged in the Constitution, how people feel about guns, for example. That's one of the many things, specific stories related to that he examines. And I think you'll enjoy that conversation if you miss the time that we spent with Peter Siegel. Also, too, we're going to talk to Liza Gibbons, and Liza Gibson, rather, and she has her own interesting tale to tell. Her brother was on that Pan Am flight that blew up over Lockerbie, Scotland. Remember that? I mean, you have to think back. Think of the connection to Libya and Gaddafi and her feelings about Gaddafi, and she shares that. And then she turns it around and becomes an expert in conflicts and puts herself in situations where she's in some of the, Lisa Gibson is in some of the scariest places in the world that you can imagine, trying to get people to listen and understand each other. You know, that's what we're often talking about, that struggle here when we talk about the chessboard in the Middle East, and she tells us some of the situations that she's been in and survived them. She knows that it's risky, but she's had some success, including in Libya. And she also talks about, in a sense, confronting Gaddafi, so you'll hear that too as well. Some of the big news heading into this Memorial Day weekend, speaking of forgiveness, I do not think that the family of the man that was killed by Jody Arias has any forgiveness for her. I think they're shocked that the jurors were deadlocked in the penalty phase of the trial. So the penalty phase becomes a mistrial. And remember, Travis Alexander is the boyfriend that she that she stabbed to death over and over again. She stabbed him. It was just such a graphically laid out and described crime that the jury had no problems finding her guilty, but now they wouldn't go for the death penalty. And you can't have it where you have one doubter. In other words, one vote is negative. You know this. So it's a very unusual circumstance, but it's part of the Arizona statute that if you get to the third phase, the penalty phase, and there's a hung jury, it means another jury comes in. So that's what happens here. Another jury will come in. So the speculation is high as to where this goes now. I mean, the prosecutors might even consider offering Arias a plea deal rather than going through the steps that it takes to find new jurors and then present the evidence to them. I would think that would get pretty cumbersome. But it's crazy that they had such a struggle. You knew that there was probably problems because they deliberated for 13 hours in the penalty phase of the trial when they told the court, you know, finally, we're not going to be able to agree. I mean, this is it. We're not going to be able to do this. And it was exceptionally cruel. It was deemed exceptionally cruel when she stabbed him almost 30 times. As I said, she slit his neck from ear to ear and shot him in the face. So she got the first-degree murder on May 8th, and that took about 15 hours. But now the idea of sentencing her to death, a jury's decision has to be unanimous. As I said, you can't have one dissenter. So this is the buzz in the backyard for sure, Memorial Day, talking about there is maybe no justice for the Alexander family. They're infuriated over what has happened here. In the meantime, also, there's more news that has come out about the British soldier killed in that meat cleaver attack. He was only, I shouldn't say only, but he was a ceremonial drummer. It's so sad. He was a machine gunner, and he was a drummer. He was a father. So well liked. He was only 25 years old. His name was Lee Rigsby, and he was part of the regimental recruiting team in London, and he was part of the 2nd Battalion of the Royal Regiment of Fusiliers, and it's an infantry group known for what they call the hackle or the feather plume. You've seen that when you've seen shots from London. It's part of the military headdress. So he had a 2-year-old son. It's just absolutely awful as they stood on the street stabbing him, you know, over and over again, and now they're how do you make sense of that? But in London, this is what people are talking about. They want to be able to recognize him, but obviously just crushed by this story and how odd it was that you had these terrorists hacking him with a meat cleaver in broad daylight, and then standing there filming it and yelling out, you know, Allah Akbar and other things. And there were worries over potential protests and whatnot in London. But so far after this terror attack, we haven't seen that. The British Prime Minister was quick to get home. He was on a trip in Paris. He came back to try to offer up to the people that he is just as mortified, but to please keep calm. A lot more coming your way. As I said, Bob Nay, Pete, and Lisa Gibson, too. So hang on, everybody. Have you ever heard of a pharmacist who discourages the use of most prescription drugs? Well, pharmacist Ben Fuchs is that person, and boy, is he fascinating. He's a nutritional pharmacist and skincare specialist who operates out of Boulder, Colorado. And to hear this man speak is nothing less than inspiring, because he's charismatic and makes a lot of sense. He asks, why take dangerous drugs when all your body needs to stay healthy is all natural with no side effects? Pharmacist Ben sees the human body as a healing and regenerating system, divinely designed to heal and renew itself on a moment-to-moment basis, but it needs nutrition and nutritional supplementation. Ben says you've got to be on a nutritional supplement program if you want to be healthy in 21st century America, and he wants to help people get off the toxic drug treadmill and get on a good nutritional supplement program. I support what Pharmacist Ben is saying and doing to help America get healthier, and I urge you to watch and listen to Ben deliver his powerful message at your convenience. Just go to AmericaTonightTeam.com. That's AmericaTonightTeam.com.
Hi, this is Gary Cooper with Midas Resources Gold and Silver. Don't be surprised when the global elite confiscates money from your bank account one day. They have already very clearly telling you that they're going to do it. With what just happened in Cyprus serving as a blueprint for future bank bailouts, if you are concerned about keeping your money, why not consider storing your wealth in gold and silver? Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130. Together we'll discuss your options of buying gold and silver. Again, the global elite have plans for your money, and it doesn't include you. So call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130, and I will send you a booklet with 10 reasons why gold and silver could be right for you. Again, don't get caught with money in your account when the next bank bailout hits. Call me, Gary Cooper, at 1-800-686-2237, extension 130.
Hey there, my name is Frank Bates. Do you know the number one most valuable item in a crisis? Some people think the answer is gold. Others think it's a gun. But the correct answer will shock you. I just created a free video at crisis123.com that reveals a surprising item that is more valuable than gold in a crisis. 97% of Americans don't have this one critical item. In fact, they haven't even given it a thought. And the sad truth is that you may not survive without it when a real crisis hits and a starving mob is right outside your door. But I have to tell you, it could literally make the difference between life and death for you and your family. Watch my video at crisis123.com to discover the number one most valuable item in a crisis. You'll be shocked. See the controversial video that thousands of other smart patriots have already seen in the last 3 months. Go watch my video now at crisis123.com before they force me to shut it down. Again, that's crisis123.com.
Oh, I'm so excited for our next guest. We love this guy, former congressman from Ohio, Bob Ney. He's got a book out. It is fantastic, I'm telling you. You'll learn everything you wanted to know about prison. You'll learn everything you want to know about Washington, D.C. And the stories, like I said, just stretch from end to end. Sideswipe, lessons learned, courtesy of the hitmen of Capitol Hill. Bob, congratulations on the book. What's the reaction been so far?
Well, don't read this book alone. It'll scare you, Kate. The reaction has been good. It's sold well. But more important than that, you know, the reaction of people, I think, has been dynamite. On both sides of the aisle, I must note, for the book. I've had a lot of good comments, Facebook comments, emails, a lot of attention paid to the book because of the, quote, salacious, or one part of it, which is, talks about Speaker Boehner. And it talks about him for a reason. I didn't just all of a sudden make this little paragraph out of nowhere to complain about John Boehner. It fits into an integral part of the story. And it goes beyond to also talk about is the barrel still corrupt? It talks about, you know, some different things that happened in Congress, also prisons and 12-step recovery. A lot about prisons in there that I think, and I don't write it so anybody feels bad for me, because that's just not the point, but they need to know what on earth goes on in the prison systems.
Yeah. The let's re-rack here for a second and tell everybody about what happened with you after meeting with Jack Abramoff and a trip to Scotland and then investigations and so on and so forth, how you ended up going to prison, and were, did you feel pretty much blindsided by that?
Well, yes. In the book, I clearly state what I did, my criminal activity, my terrible behavior. I lay it out on the line. There's a lot of warts there, and I expose that. But I also have a story about the perfect storm, because it ended up, I was offered a deal point blank by now Speaker Boehner, then the majority leader, and he offered me a deal. And that deal was, if I stepped out of my election 70 days before, I could stay in Congress for a while, step out of the election, he would find me a comparable job, and also he would raise me legal defense money so I could, quote, put this behind me. And I had 24 hours to accept that. I called back and talked to him. I accepted the deal. I announced I would be leaving, and then I could not get a phone call from the janitor that cleaned his office or an intern. And I started to spiral, and then eventually, within maybe 10 or 11 days, the Justice Department called. They were going to indict. We did a plea deal for two pleas, and I went to federal prison, sentenced for 30 months, served 17.
Yeah. So that happens to you, and you go from the power halls of Congress to inside of the inside of a prison. Was it anything at all of what you expected, if you had any thoughts of what prison would be like?
No, you know, I went from, good morning, Mr. Chairman. How are you, Mr. Chairman? What would you like to have to drink, Mr. Chairman, to Morgantown, West Virginia, with a guy saying, hey, scumbag, you're not getting a second helping of oatmeal this morning. I mean, it was just a huge, I couldn't believe what I was seeing in the sense of how they conducted the prisons. And as a lawmaker, then a lawbreaker, I had a unique perspective of standing up saying, just put them in, you know, throw the key, lock the key away, drug dealers. A lot of people in there were addicts. They weren't the Medellin drug cartel people, Kate. They were addicts. And they had addictions and they got caught. Police practically didn't have to arrest them. They almost walk into police departments. I mean, they're addicts. And there's no treatment in there for them. And I just saw a side of it that shocked me. I'd love to take members of Congress on a tour because I'm sure when they go, they get a sanitized tour.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You started off talking about Boehner and the House Speaker and the reaction to your book, and I'm going to read one little piece of this that's getting, I think, a lot of the attention you're talking about. You say in the book, one night at the Capitol Grill, Boehner got drunk and took a female staffer home. Boehner regularly gave handouts, free Barclay cigarettes from his lobbyists and campaign checks on the House floor. He called one of his staffers a fag. He broke out in all-out wailing after he was ousted from chairman of the House Republicans Conference in 1998. And then Boehner's spokesperson, Michael Steele, who used to be the RNC chair, told the Washington Post, this is a convicted felon with a history of failing to tell the truth, making a lot of baseless accusations to try and sell books. And what was your response to that?
Well, two things. I chaired House Administration. If I wanted to sell books, I could put stories in about 100 members of Congress that would total more salacious activity as a group. So it wasn't that objective. The second thing is that, you know, you do tend to lie when you're trying to stay out of prison. Once you get out of prison, you tend to not lie. You have nothing to lie about. Everything I have said in this book about Speaker Boehner, and I've said it for a reason, not to be angry because I'm not to be hateful because I'm not, it fits. Once one reads the book, it fits into everything. It tells how he runs the House. The Boehner I knew then is the Boehner I know now. And everything I have said in that book can be backed up by others and will be backed up by others who are not felons and are not known as liars.
Yeah. I mentioned the trip to Scotland because remember when all this stuff was going on, that's what kept coming up in the news. People who didn't even really realize what was happening with Scotland, Scotland, Scotland. What about everybody else that took that trip with you, like Tom DeLay?
Tom DeLay went to Scotland and he went to the Mariana Islands. And I have been asked this question hundreds of times. Jack Abramoff on 60 Minutes said he spent $1 million and he had 100 members in his pocket. And people have asked me, if he's made that statement, why just you? And why not Tom DeLay? You know, Jack paid for Tom's daughter's, a baby shower. He gave $1 million. Jack did funnel it to Tom's former chief of staff. You know, why was Ralph Reed not called before Senator McCain's committee? All these questions arise. And I can't answer that. I think that has to be answered by Alberto Gonzalez, who was Attorney General. Good luck. He can't remember 76 times what he did anyway. And then Jack Abramoff. But I have a perfect storm chapter in there. I feel because Alice Fisher, who covered up the Guantanamo Bay torture, and this sounds complicated, but you got to read the book. She covered up the torture. She was accused of being too close to Tom DeLay and his defense team, and she was doing nothing about Jack Abramoff, and they weren't going to appoint her. Boom. Jack goes away, I go away, it's all done. Everybody else takes a walk.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I did wrong things, but everybody else, you know, the two bad guys were gone.
Yeah. Did you, I'm wondering this because, of course, everybody's watching House of Cards. How accurate is House of Cards to what happens in Washington?
You know, in the Casino Jack movie, Spacey plays Jack and then the guy from Saw plays me. And I like Spacey as an actor, and he does House of Cards perfect. And I've got to tell you, it's pretty similar. A lot of good people on that hill, but, man, there's some characters, too.
What do you think, you know, because now you're not that far removed, and you were released from jail after the 11 months, 2008, and then you did the rest, of course, halfway house stuff. But after that, and now you have a different view and you can look back, what do you think has to happen for Congress to get cleaned up, I guess, for lack of a better way to describe it?
I have an afterword, which is the barrel still corrupt? Everything Jack Abramoff and I did, this, you know, any sushi we ate that came to $200 or any booze that I drank, that pales in comparison to the codification of this today in the law. I, as a member of Congress, can take you to Las Vegas. I can take some of your staffers. We can have a $3,000 dinner, and I can raise you $75,000, and it is all perfectly legal. It's done by both sides of the aisle. It's done all the time. They have drained the swamp by making all of this legal.
Yeah. It's interesting where you talk about taking to dinner and the whole lobbyist thing and all that. I had a caller, and I thought, yeah, this is it. What if you had people that came into Congress that would have to sign an agreement saying, I can't then go on to become a lobbyist once I'm done? Because that's often what happens. The influence continues.
Well, Speaker Boehner, and I mentioned the corruption and the cigarettes and the tobacco checks he passed out on the floor, all the things that are well documented. Speaker Boehner has a chance, really, I think, to be a hero. He can clean this up in a snap of a finger. They can make it illegal within one day. If you're a member of Congress or a staffer, you don't go into the lobby community period. They can stop the trips. If you want to raise campaign dollars, you can't have a $3,000 dinner. That can be stopped in a matter of hours. If they want to.
Yeah. Family-wise, how costly was all of this for you?
Well, I mean, economically, I lost everything I own, everything. Mm. The house went zero money. I had nothing left. Any bank accounts I had were drained. Now, family-wise, it was good. I did go through, I had a divorce, but, you know, my children and I and my immediate family all stayed intact. The kids would come up to visit me in prison, and I had some friends visit me, my mom and dad, my sister, et cetera. So that all stayed intact, but there were some other prices to pay. And, and it happens, and you have to get through it. You know what really, really helped me? Webb Hubble, who, you know, one time I told Webb his only sin was he was best friends with the President of the United States, Bill Clinton at the time. Webb Hubble was sentenced. And I didn't want to see anybody. I just wanted to go do my time. I was just so, you know, what planet was I on? And Ellen Ratner, my friend and your friend, made me sit down with Webb Hubble for almost 3 to 4 hours in Washington. And he walked me through how to not lose your mental faculties in prison. He walked me through it.
Yeah. Well, that was terrific. Then you got that advice. Sideswipe, lessons learned, courtesy of the hitmen of Capitol Hill. Bob Ney, you're terrific, and good luck with this book.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Thank you.
Springtime is sale time at Herbal Healer Academy. Current customers know this is the time to save big and stock up at HerbalHealer.com. New customers, welcome to the web's best place to save on vitamins, minerals, and more. Right now, Herbal Healer's spring specials include our 500 parts per million colloidal silver, all sizes on sale, CoQ10 with Hawthorn, Colon Enhancer, Sea Cucumber, Super Fam and Super Male Plex, plus Glucosamine Chondroitin, our best-selling liquid CalMag Vitamin D, and our colloidal minerals, all on sale for spring at HerbalHealer.com. And Herbal Healer also offers certificate correspondence courses in natural medicine. Enjoy same-day shipping and free online newsletter. Log on to our nation's leader in supplying quality natural medicine and education since 1988. Herbal Healer Academy at HerbalHealer.com.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio?
Something more important.
Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
There's been a disaster, and most of you don't even realize the serious concern for all of us. Alex Jones has warned you for years to get the most important supply you can for your liberty, freedom, and security, and that's food. We thought the danger was drought, or food diverted to our gas tanks, or food so expensive that we'd all need financial assistance to afford it, or our food being sold to other countries. But here's the most effective way you'll lose your liberty and security without a fight: government regulation. The do-it-yourself public services of many LDS Mormon food storage canneries can no longer be provided. This, along with the recent private gardening and farming regulations and additional government control of food supplies and resources, says food is the ultimate priority. eFoods Direct will provide free shipping on all food orders until further notice. Call 800-409-5633 or on the web eFoodsDirect.com/Alex.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey Water Filtration Systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey Light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
Move over organic. The Pureganic Companion ebook and cookbook sets a new standard for purity in our diet with a 100% toxin-free lifestyle. It's time for an American renaissance in health and quality of life. This book is loaded with simple methods to holistically eliminate disease, original recipes, a 30-day diet plan, and much more. Purchase now at PureGanicCompanion.com. The Pureganic Companion, the preventative maintenance manual for the human body.
We the People grow cotton, weave fabric, engrave ink, embed strips and fibers to protect from counterfeit, then carting to a private bank, having it lent back at interest, forcing taxes to service debt. This capitalism, or was Jefferson correct when stating a central bank issuing the public currency is a greater menace to the liberties of the people than a standing army? Hi, Ted Anderson. I'm placing a free silver dollar in a book that explains our monetary system. Call for your copy, 800-686-2237. It's time to understand the system. Call 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237.
He is just the greatest show on NPR. Wait, don't tell me. Peter Sagal, of course, and he's got something new cooking, Constitution USA. Wait till you hear about this show. He's going across the nation to look at the Constitution. And what did I read? How many words there were? 4,418 words, 27 amendments. Of course, we know that. And I know this really resonates with this audience across America.
Sure.
Peter's doing it in a very interesting way. Peter, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it, man.
It's my pleasure to be with you.
Hey, so tell everybody how you're doing this journey. Are you doing it in a Winnebago? Or what are you? Are you walking?
Please,
what are you doing?
Please, speak not of those uncool conveyances. No, we did this by taking a Harley-Davidson, a stock 2012 Road King for your biker listeners, and putting a fabulous paint job on it, red, white, and blue with We the People written on the gas tank in the constitutional style of the script, and riding that thing across the country. And we're talking to people about the Constitution, but not just, you know, people on the street, although we do that as well. The people we're talking to are people who are deeply involved, willingly or not, in constitutional issues, a medical marijuana person in California, a gun enthusiast, a gun advocate in Montana, a guy whose home was torn down by the city of New London after they won the very controversial Supreme Court case known as Kelo versus New London, which expanded the eminent domain. One of the Little Rock Nine, who at the 1957 was a little girl who was escorted by the 101st Airborne into her high school because the Supreme Court had ordered integration. And the people of Little Rock resisted, and Eisenhower sent in the troops to enforce the law. People like that, people who are really, willingly or not, at the center of our constitutional debates now. We didn't want to do, you know, classic history, 225 years ago, these people in wigs did this thing, and shouldn't we all be grateful? No, we wanted to do it like, what's happening now? How does the Constitution work and live today.
Yeah. The what was one of the most surprising things you found in doing this?
Well, I mean, we found a lot of things that were surprising and interesting. In general, the most surprising thing is that the Constitution just isn't what a lot of people think it is. And I include myself before I started this project. Most people think of the Constitution as this ruling law that all by itself will solve your problems, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you want free speech, well, the Constitution will protect it. If you want guns, the Constitution will protect that. If you want freedom of movement or to hold onto your property, well, this is a free country and a Constitution and I have my rights. The Constitution by itself does nothing. It is a piece of paper or four pieces of parchment. All it does by itself is slowly fade. The thing that makes the Constitution work is us, is Americans, and our daily interactions with each other and our group decision to simply abide by it and the rule of law. And that means everything from the fact that a police officer doesn't beat the hell out of you to get a confession when he arrests you. It means you're going to agree to a parking ticket or challenge it in court rather than, I don't know, run off into the woods with your weapons and hide from the police. It means the president agreeing to leave office when he or she loses an election. All of those acts together, millions of them committed every day, create the Constitution. It's not the paper, it's us.
Absolutely. And in talking about the stories, as you mentioned, medical marijuana, Little Rock 9, interesting. So really a wide swath. How did you narrow down, because there are so many issues, how did you narrow down who you wanted to talk to?
It was tough. One of the things we wanted to do is we wanted to get away from what everybody thinks of when they think of the Constitution. And they usually mean First Amendment, Second Amendment, and or abortion. That's what you hear about. And those are all important, by all means. I don't want to dismiss those concerns. But there are so many other things that actually pertain to the life as we live it on a daily basis. For example, we wanted to explore the Commerce Clause. The Commerce Clause is a really interesting thing that most people don't really understand. It refers to a phrase in the Constitution that Congress shall have the power to regulate trade among the several states. That's the Commerce Clause, mm-hmm. or regulate commerce among the several states. And the meanings of those words have been debated for pretty much our entire history. And in the 20th century, as our interpretation of those words changed, we created what we think of as the modern regulatory state. It's really important. It's why we have an FDA. It's why we have an EPA. It's why we have Obamacare, all done under the Commerce Clause, although mm-hmm. in the end it was done under the taxing power, but that's getting technical. You want to talk about federalism, another boring concept that's really important. Well, that's medical marijuana. The guy selling medical marijuana in Oakland, is perfectly legal under California law. He's a law-abiding taxpayer, according to the state of California. According to the federal government, he's a criminal deserving of the death penalty. And that's not hyperbole. We passed a Death Penalty Act that subjects high-volume drug dealers to the death penalty. How can he be both things at once? And it's a difficult question. And again, an argument that we've been having ever since the country was founded. Who's in control? Your locality, the state, the government?
Yeah, absolutely. And this sounds like we're doing my show, because that's what we talk about constantly, as you can imagine.
Well, it's good all, for you. It's important.
It is important. You weave in so many different issues. You know, we talked at the top the fact that you're doing this on a motorcycle and on this road, hitting the road on the motorcycle. How was that for you? Because, you know, traveling cross-country, that's not exactly easy.
Well, no, I need to be honest with you. I didn't actually travel across the country. It would have taken way too long for me to, say, ride from my home in Chicago all the way to Oakland, where we interviewed that medical cannabis salesman. So what we did was we put the bike on a trailer, and using the magic of Hollywood, we moved it about that way. Although I did, in the end, put about 1,000 miles on it. Sometimes it was just easier to ride the damn thing than put it in the trailer. So I got a lot of time on the bike, and let me tell you, that was awfully great. I had forgotten how wonderful it was.
Well, we know this is going to be educational for everybody, certainly, who watches this. But for you, as you said that, you said there were some things you didn't realize. What were some of the key takeaways for you as far as the Constitution is concerned?
I think that the Constitution has levels of genius that I didn't appreciate. That the Constitution was at its ratification, and this I'm quoting Akhil Reed Amar, one of our experts, the single greatest event in the history of mankind. And he laid that out on me, you know. And I'm like, oh, please, really? But it's true. If you think about it, all prior human history, government was by force with, you know, slight variations. Sometimes the elite and most powerful group would agree to share power, and you'd get something like Athenian democracy, which still had slaves and non-citizens and people who had no choice about how they would live their lives. It wasn't until 1787 when an entire people, a continent's worth of people, were able to vote on how they would govern themselves. And they decided to govern themselves democratically. They didn't vote on a king. They didn't vote to hand over power to a monarchy. They voted on a form of government that will allow them to perpetually govern themselves. And that really had never happened before in the history of the world. And ever since then, of course, that notion, that idea of people taking their government into their own hands has been, if not the norm, it's been the ideal that more and more and more countries have moved towards. And that's really an amazing thing. I never really appreciated that before. That's maybe the most significant thing.
Yeah, wow. Do you have a, you know, for me, the favorite amendment, of course, is Amendment 1, but I grew up in a journalism household. I got a journalism
sure.
degree, so that kind of makes sense, even though I've looked at other amendments and talked to constitutional scholars, and we look at the challenges now and what's happening in the court system with some things that relate to the Constitution. But still, Amendment number 1 is always my favorite. What about you?
Well, it's tricky. My joke is my favorite is Amendment number 3 because, you know, I just don't like troops being quartered in my home. I think that there, if you really wanted to go someplace, I'd look at the Fifth and Eighth Amendments, Fifth, Sixth, and Eighth, because they're the ones that help us and protect us when the government is out to get us. I guess you'd include the Fourth. And that's really important because the idea that we have, I mean, you know, like, look at this. You and I are having this conversation on the radio, and no one's going to stop us.
Mm-hmm.
You know? I mean, I could say one of the 7 words, and maybe you'd get in trouble, fine, but, you know, nobody cares.
Right.
What happens to you when the government decides they really don't like you? What happens when the government decides that you're a danger? It's then that you really need the protections. And so the protections for criminal defendants and civil defendants, the protections against search and seizure, the protections about the nature of trials we have, those are really important. Because we are most vulnerable when we are at our most unpopular. So I came to a real appreciation of those protections, and more than that, the people who make sure those protections work. One of my favorite people we talked to is a woman named Maya Angel Cody, who works as a federal defense attorney here in Chicago. And she is a very bright woman. She could be working for a lot more money in any private law firm she wanted the second she raised her hand and said she'd be willing to do it. But she believes that by defending, I guess what some people would call the worst of the worst, you know, we're talking drug users and petty criminals and guys who are in endless amounts of repeated trouble. But by defending those people, she believes that she is upholding the Constitution in a profound way. And I agree with her. Because the government can't just throw you in jail. They can't just decide you're not worth having around. They have to prove it. They have to accord you rights. They have to give you a chance to defend yourself. Again, unheard of in human history.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, you look at other situations, state-run news agencies, you know, if you look at even China, certainly North Korea, and there's a slew of other places. That's why they all thirst, Peter, so many people to come to America to drink in the freedoms that we have.
It's exactly.
Good, it's a good reminder.
We went to a naturalization ceremony for new citizens in Chicago, and we talked to everybody about the reasons they came to America and went through the process of becoming citizens. Not an easy thing to do. And many of them, as you would expect, they wanted to be free, they wanted to make a living, they wanted more opportunity for themselves and their family, just like you and I would. But there were some people, one guy who told us about the story about how he was taken in the middle of the night by the police in his home country of El Salvador and tortured. I mean, in other countries, there's nothing to stop people from doing that. And here, not only do we have our Bill of Rights, but even more importantly, we have ranges of people who are determined to uphold it. And that's really what saves us all, this American creed that everybody has rights, we are a government of laws, and we will behave according to those dictates at all times. And if we screw it up, we'll self-correct. If we screw it up, we'll hold the person responsible, we'll undo the damage and move on.
Yeah, well said. Can't wait to see this. Folks, tonight, of course, and we're going to be pubbing it, and it starts at 9 o'clock, Constitution USA, with Peter Segal. Peter, thanks for coming on the show. Appreciate it.
My pleasure. It's great to talk to you. Thanks for your good work.
Thanks. Bye-bye, Pete.
Great news, pure water lovers. BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com has a special discount offer for all GCN listeners. You can't do better than a Big Berkey for economy. For only 1.7 cents a gallon, a single set of filters can last for 5 to 10 years. There's none better than a Big Berkey for emergency preparedness as a backup water source. And you just can't beat a Big Berkey to remove dangerous chlorine, all types of fluoride, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, parasites, and unhealthy byproducts from municipal water. Berkey water filter systems are even powerful enough to purify stagnant pond water. For the gold standard in water filters, get a Big Berkey at BigBerkeyWaterFilters.com. And all GCN listeners get 5% off all ceramic filter systems. For details, call 1-877-99-BERKEY. That's 877-99-BERKEY. Big Berkey Water Filters, for the love of clean water.
Did you know that 50% of heart attacks are brought on by infections? Did you know that hospitals are breeding grounds for antibiotic-resistant bugs like MRSA? The environment is infected with parasites, and the mild winter means ticks with Lyme disease, mosquitoes with West Nile virus, and cold and flu viruses will be on the rise. Protect yourself with nature's natural antiparasitic, antiviral, antifungal, antibiotic, Allicin, the heart of garlic. Get concentrated protection with Alli-C and Alli-Ban from Affinity Health Products. One capsule of Alli-C equals 40 cloves of garlic or 100 garlic pills with no garlic breath. Alli-Ban has Allicin in spray, liquid, and cream forms with three times more strength than leading brands and costs less. Go to Alli-C.com, spelled Alli-C.com, or call 855-ALLISON. That's 855-255-4246. That's 855-255-4246. Protect yourself with Alli-C and Alli-Ban from Affinity Health Products at Alli-C.com.
Being prepared against possible food shortages and economic collapse is not complicated. Just remember two words, disaster, stuff. Add .com after those two words and you've got just one site for all your preparedness needs. DisasterStuff.com prepares your family against food shortages with Linden Farms freeze-dried foods in buckets or Gourmet Reserves freeze-dried food in number 10 cans, both with free shipping. Purify and rid your water of contaminants with a Big Berkey or other Berkey system and get free shipping plus a water level spigot or fluoride filter at cost. And protect your radios and other electronics from EMPs with our EMP Faraday bags starting at just $5.90. When the food shortages and economic instability happens, be ready with all your stuff from DisasterStuff.com. Just remember two words, DisasterStuff.com. Freedom through self-reliance and personal responsibility.
All right, the big news tonight, of course, is the FBI releasing the photographs of some persons of interest, people who they believe were involved in the bombing at the Boston Marathon. In the wings is Lisa Gibson. She lost her brother in the 1988 bombing of Pan Am Flight 103 over Scotland, and since then she's become really a terrorism expert. And what I think is really fascinating, very cool, is that she does conflict resolution training in places like Afghanistan, Libya, think of Libya, Iraq, Sudan, and probably some other places as well. Lisa, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate your time.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
So when you see something like what happened at the Boston Marathon, you see those images, what's your initial reaction to that?
You know, it's actually, in some ways, it's almost re-traumatizes me a little bit. I found myself really immediately empathizing with the family members and what they might be experiencing, the emotions, the confusion that will continue for days and weeks and maybe even months afterwards while they're trying to figure out who's responsible. So it was really, a lot of ways, brought up a lot of the same emotions I felt back in 1988.
Yeah. And and when your brother, if you say you go back and you feel that, you go back to 88, once you get over, and how do you ever get over, but once you go through the initial shock period and the grieving and all that, how long did it take you to say, wow, I want justice, or I want some change, or I want to get involved, I want to do something? How long did that take?
You know, actually for me, it happened in the midst of my grieving process. I kind of immediately went to this place of, how do I prevent something like this from happening again? Because I guess I realized that I couldn't bring my brother back, but maybe, if I learned the roots of terrorism and why people engage in this behavior, maybe I could actually do something to prevent a future act of terrorism later down the road.
Yeah. So take us to the point where, and of course this made huge headlines when you actually met Libya's leader at the time, Muammar Gaddafi. What was that like for you?
That was a meeting that had been about maybe 20 years in the making. I had actually gone on a personal reconciliation trip to Libya in 2004. It was kind of my effort to kind of take the next step in healing and realizing that kind of my tendency as a human was to sort of look at the Libyan people and maybe demonize them all as being terrorists. And I didn't want that to be the case. So I went on a trip in 2004 hoping to meet the people so I could begin to see them differently. But I also requested to meet with Gaddafi at the time. He chose not to, but I knew at one point I'd had that opportunity. And so I started a nonprofit called the Peace and Prosperity Alliance that got me involved in doing humanitarian and education projects in Libya. And then eventually, after years of serving there and building relationships with the Libyan government, I had the opportunity to meet him in 2009 when he came to speak at the UN. And it was really kind of a surreal meeting, to be honest. That I could tell that the timing was right, though, because when I sat with the man, I mean, I really felt a sense of peace, which had to have been something that had come through the years of trying to figure out how to not only find justice, but also to forgive. And so I had a sense of peace meeting with him that it really was more about communicating a message that, even though you've responded in a hateful way and in wickedness towards my family and other family members, I'm going to choose to sort of take the moral high ground and reach out in forgiveness. And that really was the message that was communicated to him, as well as the story that went around the world.
Yeah. And then, of course, that happens, and you fast forward a couple of years later, and you see what happened in Libya and what was going on with the people, and ultimately the death of Gaddafi, and I would imagine that's almost like full circle for you.
Yeah, actually, I had been in Libya during the revolution. In fact, I spoke at a rally in Benghazi in Freedom Square on the day that the International Court actually issued the arrest warrant for him. So in many ways, it was that to me actually was kind of the circle of closure for me as I stood on the stage and was able to just sort of bring a word of encouragement to other people who were still suffering at the hands of Gaddafi, and just to let them know that I had lost a loved one and I wanted to come there to stand with them in their time and to help in any way possible. And for me, it was like very profound. I felt like it was kind of the circle of reconciliation came to a close.
Yeah. What would you say the, you know, so much of the conversation we started off talking about Boston and your feelings when you saw what happened there. There's going to be a lot of people who are dealing with a lot of things, loss and incredible loss with the people that have barely survived. And, of course, the people that died in this, including the 8-year-old boy, just so sad for that family who's dealing with two different injuries. And can you imagine? What would you tell the people that were in the middle of that?
I mean, I think the most important thing that the people are going to need is to give themselves time to grieve not only the loss of their family members for those that lost loved ones, but just to the loss of the ideal. I mean, the Boston Marathon is an event that's, you know, a very happy and, you know, it's an event that's gone on for years. And in some ways, it's going to paint their view of things like that and cause people to sort of shrink back in fear. And the most important thing to understand is really at the heart of terrorism is to create fear and chaos. So that's the reason they target innocent people, is to try to create chaos. And so the most important thing is the midst of your grieving and sorrow is to feel the fullness of it, but also refuse to be crippled with fear. And because that would just allow the terrorists to win. And that's kind of been the posture that I've tried to encourage people. Yes, you can feel the reality of what happened, but ultimately move beyond that to realize that it's not something that everybody in a particular ethnic group or cultural group are a part of. and hopefully we'll be able to move forward a little bit easier.
Yeah, the things that you've learned in becoming a terrorism expert and especially working with conflict resolution, it has to be, when you go into some of the places that you've gone in, and I just mentioned a few of them, the Sudan, and certainly we know what's going on in the Sudan. Do you have, is there a certain fear that you kind of feel when you're in certain places initially, or no, you have a way to get to a calm place and to try to help people?
Well, I mean, because of the kind of work that I do, I mean, I'm going into countries that are in either the midst of war or coming out of a conflict. It's going to be unstable. Like, I was in Benghazi in December, just this past December. That was only a couple months after they assassinated our ambassador.
Yeah.
And it's continued to be stabilized since then. So it was definitely not stable when I went there. But I really feel this compelling need to take the message to places where there are, you know, terrorist activities and things on a daily basis, that there is a different way. And I think that's what fuels me is, you know, going to Afghanistan and going to Libya and going to places where they've lived in a culture of revenge, and showing them there's another way to resolve conflict. Because I've heard their feedback and I've had them say, you know, we have to come back, we have to train more people. I realize that I may risk my life, but in the end, it's worth it.
And in training people, what are some of the things that you tell them to just, because that's hard, you know, to push the revenge aside. This is awful, what's happening and what has gone on and maybe what happened to your family. But how do you get them to that place where they can make the leap to get away from revenge?
Well, I mean, there's a lot of the cultural things are built into living under an oppressive regime. Most of the countries that I'm going into have lived under an oppression. And so they've never been empowered or had freedom or had anything. And so there's a lot of fear, paranoia of each other. In fact, getting them to talk to one another, and this idea of mediation is to talk through conflict, is very scary because it was never okay. But yet, in I think the deep heart of who they are as humans, they realize there's got to be a better way. But I remember when I first trained in Libya, the first question I asked was, well, how do you currently resolve conflicts in Libya? And they said, we all have guns. So it was a very real, honest answer. But I think in their humanness, they realize that there is another way, and they want to find an effective way to do that.
And is this, you know, is it gender specific? I mean, is it different when you're talking to the men in different cultures versus the women, or you try to sort of make it all one for all?
Actually, I think in many ways, I mean, how they may retaliate may be a little different. We talk about the difference between a retaliatory cycle and a conciliatory cycle. That's really the heart of more peaceful conflict resolution. And so the two types of the retaliatory cycle would be fight or flight. And so women often may tend to flight more than fight, but some women are fighters, and a lot of it has to do with their culture, their family of origin, I mean, all kinds of things. And you just really can't put one person in a box. You have to take them at their individual level and just show them skills to work through conflicts more effectively.
Yeah. Great stuff, Lisa. Thanks so much. Pick up her book, Life in Death, A Journey from Terrorism to Triumph. I think she really filled us in on some amazing things that she's doing, certainly, and getting over that and coming full circle. Lisa, thanks.
Thanks for having me.
Have you ever consumed protein powder supplements? I have, and all of them don't taste that good. Have artificial flavors, sweeteners, or unhealthy sugars. About a year ago, I was introduced to a new protein powder that changed my experience. This protein powder made me feel noticeably better, and it tasted more delicious than any drink I've ever had. Here's the experience of one satisfied user named Rich.
The term best of all worlds has been belabored to death. And yet I've just discovered a whey protein powder that truly deserves to be called best of all worlds. Best taste? By far. Best results? By far. You almost feel like you're cheating that something that tastes that good could be so good for you. Thank you, Stephen, and Cocoon Nutrition. One World Whey truly is the best of all worlds. The only way for me. Yours truly, Rich from Georgia. Real user, real happy.
Call 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.